This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. In Paris, the bells of Notre Dame tolling at the official reopening of the cathedral 5 years after the 2019 fire. Large numbers of delegates from around the world are there, including President-elect Donald Trump and First Lady Jill Biden. A backpack recovered, believed to belong to the suspected killer of the UnitedHealthcare CEO. It appears that the suspect left New York City on a bus the day of the shooting. Former NYPD Chief of Detectives Robert Boyce says the bus routes out of that Upper Manhattan location are limited.
It only goes to three cities. It goes to Philadelphia, Boston, and D.C. The best guess is he went to D.C. right now. So you want to push that out. We're sending officers and detectives out to those cities to see if he came in that way.
A decision upheld by a federal judge Friday that the Chinese company ByteDance that owns TikTok must sell it or see it banned in the U.S. This is ABC News. The FBI warning smartphone owners the Chinese government may be able to see text messages between iPhones and Androids. More from ABC's Alexis Christophorus.
U.S. officials say the Chinese have hacked their way into the SMS system that sends those green bubbled text messages between users of different phone systems. So to keep your text messages safe, cybersecurity experts are recommending using encrypted programs like WhatsApp, Signal, or Telegraph. There are lots of them out there. They also recommend using a cell phone that automatically receives those operating system updates. And be careful not to text sensitive personal information like social security numbers, credit card info, or your passwords.
And of course, a foolproof way to protect texts between smartphone systems is not send them at all. Pick up the phone and call. California will now require taxi and rideshare companies to have their drivers fingerprinted if they want to be able to transport unaccompanied minors. The state is also requiring the transit companies to foot the bill for extra screening. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Earl Ingram.
Mr. Ben Wickler, he is running for the national DNC chair. The fundamental problem was the Democratic brand. Do you think that is the case more than the Harris campaign?
Core answer is yes. The Democratic brand, it's not what we necessarily do or say. It's what people have heard and internalized. And that to me is an argument for thinking about how and where we communicate, making sure we are present in places where people are thinking about stuff other than politics.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. More than 500,000 Wisconsinites are unpaid family caregivers. They're the backbone of our long-term care system. And AARP says the state could be doing more to support them. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
Family caregivers often go without vital support, even as they provide an estimated 538 million hours of care to loved ones each year, according to AARP data. The holidays can bring added stress to their already full plates, but Martin Hernandez with AARP Wisconsin says times like these are when important discussions should happen.
This is an opportunity to come together with family and friends and have those open and frank conversations that people should be having about caregiving, both in the situation they might be currently, but then also planning for the future.
It's estimated caregivers spend on average about $7,000 a year on related out-of-pocket expenses. He says AARP Wisconsin will ask state legislators to once again consider a tax credit for family caregivers of up to $500 in the next session. A bill in Congress for a larger federal tax credit for caregivers has sat in a U.S. House subcommittee for almost a year. Expanding the state's family medical leave law to include up to 14 weeks of paid leave is also needed, Hernandez says. Proponents also hope the state will prioritize the needs of caregivers and the state's aging population as they develop the next state budget, which could include adopting the Medicaid expansion. Wisconsin is one of 10 states that has not yet expanded its Medicaid program, which would extend eligibility to about 91,000 more residents. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly cloudy. We'll see a high near 46. Winds could gust up to 20 out of the southwest. Mostly clear tonight, a low around 28. Mostly sunny, mid-40s for Sunday. 44 and breezy for Monday, with mostly sunny skies. 26 Tuesday.
Right now, it's 44.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll take a look back at the weekend, update you on the news, and get you into the holiday season as we prepare to travel to Seattle. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX. La Crosse is home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey there, political orphans, swing voters, independents, that whole gang. Welcome to special edition of Lost in the Middle. We're going to do a countdown between the middle of September and work our way up till Election Day. And we've sort of switched out the format. This won't be storytelling the way we do things. But instead, what I'm doing is talking to some of the smartest political podcast hosts in the country. But before we go there, I want to tell you a quick story. When I left Congress, it was sort of running up to the 2000 election. And I got a call from a good friend of mine named Brady Williamson. And Brady said, I've got an idea for you. What's that? He said, let's try to get a political debate in Madison because it would be interesting in the 2000 election. And Brady had worked for the Clintons for years and was a Democratic operative. And I said, let's rock and roll. So we reached out to what was then called the Political Debate Commission, which everybody thought was an official arm of the federal government, but instead it was just a cozy room between a longstanding Republican and a longstanding Democratic operative who figured out a way to make money on this. And the deal was you had to raise $500,000 because the presidential debate is a television operation. And so the first thing we had to do was raise, I don't know, I think it was $200,000 to show that we were serious, which actually was much easier than we thought it would be. We had a couple of large Madison businesses step forward, and then some foundations locally, and then we're ready to rock and roll. And then out come the folks who actually scout the presidential debate. And so we wandered around Madison looking for venues. And so the whole Madison community was geeked about the idea. And then they wanted to show off the new Madison Civic Center, which had been designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. And they walked in the room, and we probably spent maybe 3.5 minutes in it, because if you've ever seen anything designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, it may be brilliant, but it's weird. And every section we looked, there was a column or a weird thing. Walked out of that. Then went to the old Oscar Mayer Theater. Yes, Madison was the home of Oscar Mayer Wieners and the Wienermobile. And they liked that a lot, but it was a really cool old building and would have great angles to look down on the audience and looked very ornate and very rich. And then it turned out by the time they built out the stage downstairs, there'd be no time for sitting. So that went out the window. And so we ended up with the Madison Expo Center, which was just basically a big box. So it was a weird year because the Olympics were that fall and the World Series was really late. And so they decided at the end of the day, they're going to have to do all of the four debates, three presidential and one vice presidential, in a very compressed time frame. So we're sitting around like the NFL draft waiting for the phone to ring. And they pick up the phone and say, Brady, Scott, we've got some great news for you. Okay, we want you to host the vice presidential debate. It's like, who the hell watches the vice presidential debate, much less trying to raise $500,000 to stage it? And as we're looking through sort of depressed glasses at one another, they say, here's the date. And they pick a weekend in October in a great, Wisconsin story that's not a punchline. It was the World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. We were off the hook. You could not find a hotel room because people with trailers and pickup trucks were driving their prize Holsteins to Dane County, Wisconsin to show them off. So our prize for doing that was actually we got tickets to go to the presidential debate in Boston. Al Gore and George Bush. The highlight of the night for me personally was that Christy Brinkley sat in front of me with purple, sort of eggplant-colored leather pants. And let's just say it was not a particularly good look. But the defining moment of the debate was Al Gore doing this every time George Bush started to answer a question. And it's literally, graded by historians, is one of the 10 worst debate moments in U.S. presidential history. So we never ended up with the debate here, but we just all watched the debate. And I want to turn around to my guest, Andrew Heaton, who's actually calling us in from Scotland, from a phone booth in a men's businessman club, I take it is, Andrew?
I'm at the Royal Scots Club, which is just a nice, stuffy club that has allowed me to become a member. I like to work out of here, and being a humble boy from Oklahoma, I find it endlessly funny to talk to old British men in three-piece suits. So I come to Scotland to avoid the Texan weather for about a month a year, and then I work out of here.
Well, you can tell by the early introduction. So Andrew actually hosts a podcast much aligned with us called The Political Orphanage. So that means my political orphans actually live in his political orphanage when they turn into his podcast, which is terrific. Mm-hmm. He's been a stand-up comedian. He's performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. He's written a bunch of books, including one that's called Laughter is Better Than Communism. And he actually opened up for William Shatner, who said, wow, that Andrew guy, he's pretty funny. But the cool thing is, and most people won't know this, and I actually know this because my youngest son spent some time in comedy, is you performed with Upright Citizens Brigade in L.A., which is sort of the West Coast version of Second City, who don't know it. So,
yeah, it was New York, but yes, the UCB, it had outposts on both coasts, and I got improvisational training from the good people at UCB. I have a certificate saying I'm funny. I have it on my wall. UCB is a fish. I'm licensed to be funny by UCB.
That's terrific. Worked on the Hill for Tim Holden, who's an old buddy of mine, who was a Democrat from Pittsburgh. We used to play in the congressional baseball game together. And Tim actually had one of the worst moments I've ever seen because he and Bill Jefferson, another Democrat from Louisiana, who later on got sentenced to prison for racketeering, but that's an entirely different story. Tim was at first base. Bill was at catcher. Somebody popped up in the middle of the first base and home plate, and they collided head on. And Steve Largent was playing with us, former NFL football player, who said that was the ugliest collision I've ever seen, worse than anything I'd ever seen in the NFL. And they both, Tim got gashes, Jefferson got teeth knocked out, everything in the world. So now that I've completely wasted everybody's time for 8 or 9 minutes with a story that went nowhere, let's talk about your impressions of the debate. Does it really matter? Did it really change anybody's mind?
Yes, I think they do. So I was very skeptical of the debates up until about 3 months ago. I'm one of these people that is angry at the what had been the Presidential Commission on Debates, because it seemed to me that they were intentionally icing out any third party candidates that would come in, and I was ruffled about that. I was angry that Gary Johnson had approached whatever metric they needed, and then they immediately put it up to 10% in order to ice him out, and was taking the rather cynical view of, like, look, everyone in America has made up their mind about Biden and Trump. This is before Biden dropped out. No one needs any additional information. It's not as if Trump is some sort of coy, opaque figure that we don't know a lot about. And I have changed my tune on that completely. I watched the debate between Biden and Trump, and I had been likewise kind of skeptical about the whole Biden mental acuity thing, because that sounded to me like kind of a made up Republican talking point. And then I, like much of the rest of the country, watched the president's brains drain out of his ears like motor oil and went, this apparently they were right about this. We have been gaslit, America. So I thought that the debate did a really good public service at that point. For that reason, I think the debates are good, just because they do allow you to see if somebody's truly crazy or not. I don't think that they're particularly salient for policy discussions, and the latest debate was not salient for policy discussions, but I think that they could be useful in that regard. In terms of pushing people to vote in a particular direction, yes. My understanding is that last-minute voters tend to be disproportionately affected by the personalities they see on display at the debates and by bombardments of advertising that get them the last couple of weeks. So for most people that are plugged into politics, and I would imagine that that's the bulk of your audience, they probably have their own internal compass that they're using and some kind of metric they're using to make decisions in terms of who they're going to vote for that involves ideology and policy goals and character or something to that effect, right? I think there is a group of people, and they're ultimately who's going to determine this election, which are not nearly that attuned to politics. And so for them, they're running a lot of this off of gut feelings and vibes. And in that capacity, I think it's going to really benefit Kamala Harris, because my personal suspicion is I'm telling all the Scots while I'm here, I'm putting it 60-40 on Kamala Trump. I think she's going to take it. It's going to be razor thin, but I think that she's probably going to take it. And my rationale for this is that I think the last minute voters, they're not reliably Republican or Democrat, are going to basically go, I don't know, I associate Trump with old screamy guys. I don't like that. Let's give this new lady a try. She seems sane. And Kamala did a good job of appearing sane and reasonably normal for the course of the debate. And so I think that vibe will work to her advantage.
So who's left that hasn't made up their mind?
I think it is the swing, like the truly swing voters, right? So like I'm an independent, and I'm a big critic of the two-party system, and I will kind of join people in breathlessly talking about how wonderful it is that independents are gaining traction and they're now the largest voting bloc. They're larger than Republicans or Democrats. But when you really look at it, the majority of independents, probably about 80%, are reliably Republican or Democratic voters, but they just really don't like the party. And so it's almost like a protest that they're registering as an independent, but they're going to vote Republican or Democrat. That leaves about 20%. And half of those people, I think, are like me, where we are very plugged in, but we have our own aberrant, weird Rorschach test that we're applying to American politics, which means we're not permanently in the pocket of either camp. But I think that there's another group of people that for them, they're living their lives and they're thinking about work and thinking about their kids. And they're not really thinking about politics. And so they're a lot more affected by how they would judge a used car salesman, which is like, does this person seem honest? Does this person seem like they're going to be the person who's going to sell me the right car? Are they going to swindle me? Can they get things done? Are they going to be a good boss? They're going with personality attributes to a great extent. And I think those are the kind of swing voters that will be swayed by the debate.
I think for folks who are political junkies, it's hard to understand. I mean, I keep running into people who say there can't be any undecided voters. They can't be, but there are. And I think people have a hard time comprehending that. And, you know, the interesting thing is if you talk to political consultants, I mean, I spent a bunch of time arguing with Mike Murphy over this idea, whether they're independents or really they're just closet Republicans or closet Democrats. If you talk to the folks at Arizona State and Tom Riley, who runs the only political science department in the country, which has a specific study of independent voters, he'll tell you there are a significant chunk. And if you look, you can see it for yourself. If you look at the vote totals in 2012, they went dramatically for Obama. Then they turned around and shifted to Trump. And then in 20, they shifted around and voted for Clinton. So I do think there's a group that is permanently disengaged with either of the major political parties. But we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Andrew, I want to talk to you about why I think your analysis is wrong on the debate, because I want to tell you the two issues that I think are trouble for Harris.
Great.
This podcast is brought to you by the American Property Owners Alliance. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that protects property owners and their interests. Did you know that in 10 states and Washington, D.C., the government can take more than what it is owed in property taxes in the instance of a foreclosure? From 2014 to 2021, 8,600 homes and more than $780 million in savings were lost to this practice, known as home equity theft. We are working to end home equity theft everywhere it remains on the books. Visit PropertyOwnersAlliance.org to join the effort to protect property rights.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Pat Kreitlow, all your time in the media, television, radio, what have you, what was one or two of the oddest things that people were complaining about?
As a TV anchor, your hair.
You have some of the finest hair around. How could anybody criticize your hair?
Oh, well, because a consultant forced me to change it.
Were there focus groups?
I'm not aware of any focus groups other than the audience, which universally hated it. It was a bowl haircut.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Dr. Susan Webb Yackey, what advice would you give everyone who has an opportunity to engage in conversation with folks, and sometimes we don't think alike?
One state of mind is to be curious about it. How did you come to that point of view? And the other is humility. This idea that we don't have all the answers.
The
Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Well, welcome back, and we're just beginning our conversation with Andrew Heaton, who's a great political podcast host on a podcast called The Political Orphanage. He's done a lot of comedy work. He's written a whole bunch, and he and I think share a lot of sort of similar framing of how we think this election goes. So if
I'll even add to that, Scott. You were kind enough to come on my program, The Political Orphanage, and you think so similar to me that it kind of freaked me out. And at one point, I began postulating that you might be me from the future who'd come back to talk to me in the past. It was very unnerving.
Well, we can probably sell that as a pilot to CBS or somebody.
Yeah, right? I like that. Time-traveling pundits, yeah.
So there's sort of two framing things you have to do in elections. Well, there's actually three. I mean, if you and I are running against each other, I have to define you. Right. And then I have to define who I am. And then the third thing is you have to figure out what issues you're running on. And sometimes that's good for you and sometimes it's bad for you. And I think the problem for Harris is going to be as we get closer to those undecided voters, it's people who weren't thrilled with what the economy's looked like the last 4 years. And I think I'm not a fan of the former president, as anybody who listens to this show knows. But I just think at the end of the day, it's people who are still worried about the cost of gas, the cost of bread, about taking their kids to McDonald's, about canceling a summer vacation. I think those folks are going to look and say, wow, Trump's really a strange guy, but it was better than he was president.
That could be the case. I mean, I think one of the other things that Kamala is doing that is a strategic decision that may or may not benefit her is she's intentionally trying to remain a kind of Schrodinger's candidate, where when she ran in 2020, as Trump has pointed out multiple times, she ran as a very progressive candidate and then flamed out before Iowa, whereas now she has tacked much more to the center and is emphatically in favor of fracking and all of the things that more centrist Democrats would favor. When I was at the Democratic National Convention last month, it was lots of really good vibes. Everybody was really happy. The AOC wing of the party was really happy with her. They were thrilled with Tim Walz. The Obama free trade wing of the party liked her. Everybody liked her. And so she had a kind of internal rationale not to cease being a quantum candidate and really define herself because she'd alienate one wing or the other. And she's kind of started doing that because she's released some policy papers, so you can now actually get a feel for what she's allegedly going to do. But I think she's kind of playing that same card at the general election. And I do think it'll help in terms of the people that are just going off of vibes because they're just going to see a fresh face and go, I don't know, let's try a new one. In terms of the economy, you might have a point there. The polls indicate that people associate Trump with a better economy. I have a lot of qualms with that in that I am very much in favor of free trade and think tariffs are stupid. So I have a lot of problems with his economic model. But that seems to be earned or unearned the benefit that he gets. He gets like a +5 in economy.
Yeah, which is interesting. And then the other issue, which isn't hot for her either, is immigration. And so that's why I think she did a marvelous job in the debate making the case for the case against the Republicans on abortion, which I thought was really the high moment of the campaign. And now let's talk about the low moment of the campaign. People eating pets and casseroles in Ohio, which seems, you know, I appreciate the fact that CBS fact checked it, but did you really need to fact check that?
That, all right. There's two ways we can look at American politics going forward. We can either be very sad or we can find it very funny. I've decided to find it very funny. I have decided to treat this more like a sitcom than a Black Mirror episode. And looking at it with the sitcom analysis, I thought that whole moment was very funny because the precipitating moment to that was Kamala obviously baiting Donald Trump in a way that you could see from a million miles away, where I don't remember what the actual thing they were discussing was. Probably it wasn't the border. It was something else, the economy. I don't know. And she went, I invite people to watch a Trump rally. Because what you will find is that people leave early because they find it boring and exhausting. And I saw that and I was like, there's no, like any other political candidate would go, well, that's just, you know, like that's not really pertinent to what we're discussing here. But Trump could not, like, in a million years, Trump cannot let that go. So he immediately had to come back with, like, our rallies are amazing. And then after that, he was so addled, that's when he stepped into the they're eating cats line. And yes, I think the weird analysis that I have been seeing of the debate is where a lot of the pro-Trump people are saying, you know, the moderators were fact-checking Trump much harder than Kamala Harris. And I'm like, yes, I agree on that. However, the whole they shouldn't have fact-checked him as hard on immigrants are eating cats line, to me, is just not a really good strategy. I'm saying, like, if only they hadn't fact-checked him on that, he'd be doing okay. I don't think so.
But the flip side of that, and I thought CBS really, or excuse me, ABC did a pretty good job and tried to balance it. And I think the mics being muted, while it didn't make for as much street theater, at least you got to hear what people were saying rather than, it's my turn to talk. But I was troubled by the fact they asked one question about her policy flips. She answered it on fracking without pushing her. And then they never went back to the other stuff, which I thought led her off far too easy. And that bothers me. I mean, I generally, as somebody who spent 14 years in journalism, still spend lots of time on the journalism board at Northwestern University. I find a lot of the coverage, unfortunately, skewed. Do you agree with me on that?
Wholeheartedly, yes. I know you played board games when you were in high school, Scott. Did you ever play Dungeons and Dragons by chance?
I wasn't that weird. I played Risk and games in a couple
of times. Nice. I was a big Risk guy. In D&D, you've got character attributes, and you'll roll your character attributes of how strong you are and how smart you are. And in American politics, Republicans just kind of get a +5 automatically on the economy, and they get a +5 on defense. And Democrats just get like a +10 on integrity from the media. Like they just you by virtue of being a Democrat, you automatically get kind of a soft glove there. I didn't think that the moderators were in the can for Kamala. But I agree. I think generally speaking that the people that are running those debates are probably trying to be even handed. But they're personally very invested in Trump losing. And as a result, they're overzealous in fact-checking him. And I think that goes back to, like, Romney and Obama. I don't disagree with that. I think that the media scrutiny is a lot harder. It's arguably one of the benefits of Trump, because I'm also not a Trump guy, but one of the benefits of Trump is that I think he actually compels journalists to do their job. When Biden, like, I as a, like, turn-your-head-and-squint-level journalist, like, I could technically be a journalist depending on how you're looking at me. I view myself as in a positive adversarial relationship with politicians, the same way that a prosecutor is in a positive adversarial relationship with a defense attorney. There's an emergent order that comes out of the system by virtue of both parties squaring off against each other. So I don't want to take the position of just liking people in power from one side and disliking the other. I think we should always be putting pressure on them. And when Biden won the last election, the fact checker for CNN just went on vacation. And I looked at that and was like, but this is the exact time that you should be fact checking the incoming guy when he's like, this is the time to really. But the attitude was the threat is over. The threat is over. we can all go home now. And yes, I think that that becomes a big problem with legacy media.
Well, and I think there's a big problem with legacy media, too, in terms of diversity, right? You saw the big kerfuffle when one of the NPR editors quit because when he did a check of where his fellow reporters were registered, you can do that at the political rolls in Virginia and Washington and Maryland because it's all a public record. There were no Republicans. It was 93-0. And famously, you know, the in the study that was done by Nate Silver, it was only 6% of journalists self-identified as Republicans. So not that they're making things up, but it would help if they had a little different perspective and didn't think the world would be solved by five more government programs.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. In Paris, the bells of Notre Dame tolling at the official reopening of the cathedral 5 years after the 2019 fire. Large numbers of delegates from around the world are there, including President-elect Donald Trump and First Lady Jill Biden. A backpack recovered, believed to belong to the suspected killer of the UnitedHealthcare CEO. It appears that the suspect left New York City on a bus the day of the shooting. Former NYPD Chief of Detectives Robert Boyce says the bus routes out of that Upper Manhattan location are limited.
It only goes to three cities. It goes to Philadelphia, Boston, and D.C. The best guess is he went to D.C. right now. So you want to push that out. We're sending officers and detectives out to those cities to see if he came in that way.
A decision upheld by a federal judge Friday that the Chinese company ByteDance that owns TikTok must sell it or see it banned in the U.S. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
The Bucks lose to the Celtics. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks lost to the Boston Celtics 111-105 last night. Damian Lillard had 31 points. Chris Middleton scored 11 points and had 5 assists. In his return since surgery on both ankles last summer, he was greeted by the Celtics with some physical contact, but says he was ready for it.
You know, something that's been happening to me, you know, play groups, one-on-one sessions, workouts, feeling that contact. Of course, the contact is a little bit more during the game, but, you know, I needed that. I needed to feel like what it feels like to get hit. Fall down on the floor and, you know, not really worry about anything. So that felt great. But I knocked down the shot, too, in the free throw. But, you know, just cool with it.
The Bucks are in Brooklyn tomorrow against the Nets. The Women's College Volleyball Tournament, the Badgers and Golden Eagles, are in the Sweet 16, headed to the regionals next week. Last night, the Badgers beat number 7th-ranked Georgia Tech at the Fieldhouse in Madison 3-1. Marquette held out in a thriller over Utah 3-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection is here to help protect you against scams. If you receive a text or email about a delayed package, find a popular item sold online at a deep...
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly cloudy. We'll see a high near 46. Winds could gust up to 20 out of the southwest. Mostly clear tonight, a low around 28. Mostly sunny, mid-40s for Sunday. 44 and breezy for Monday, with mostly sunny skies. 26 Tuesday.
Currently, 46 degrees.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Aaron Sommers, so you watched a film called Hot Frosty.
The main character puts a scarf that she does not know is enchanted around this snowman, and he comes to life, and he starts streaking through the town.
Is there any sex in this movie, Aaron?
There is not.
I think they're missing a perfect thing to go with a fetish snowman thing here.
Gotta bet that audience is huge.
What's your kink?
Snowman.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy. We're talking about the Act 10 overturned by a Dane County judge.
I think it's important for everyone to know that this was the state that in 1959 first granted public employees the right to organize and bargain collectively. We have a lot to take back. You know, I used to say take back America, but I say take back Wisconsin.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, Give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Cash Patel, who Trump has nominated to be the head of the FBI, said he wants to basically shut down the main parts of the FBI. Bill Barr, MAGA Republican Attorney General to Donald Trump. Quote, the very idea of moving Patel into a role like this showed a shocking detachment from reality. Unquote. This is not the left calling out Patel. This is the right.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, I'm Charlie Behrens. This week, I'm answering your questions on Civic Media.
Okay, McFeisty23 asks, were you always funny? Like, were you a comedian as a kid?
No, I was quiet as a kid, but...
Were you really?
I don't know. Was I? I can't remember. I was a
child.
What
were you like as a kid?
As a kid, I mean, you got a bunch of brothers growing up, you know, you're kind of giving each other crap, you know, you're fighting a lot, you're escaping, you know, out on my bicycle, pretty young age, just riding around, free range child. This was back before we could sit inside and waste our lives on our phone, you know, so if we wanted to like see something cool, you had to get on your bike and go see it. You know, we would go, me and my buddy Jay would go up to the church and we would find used cigarettes that weren't fully smoked. And we would take those to the woods and finish smoking them.
How old were you?
I want to say like 10, 11 at that point.
Mm. That's when I was born. That's cool.
Yeah. And I was out there trying to, you know, you do weird things as a kid.
You were an environmentalist at that age. You were just like recycling. You were doing upcycled cigarettes.
Yeah. I don't know why we did that. That's nasty. Like we would smoke some with lipstick on it, you know, it was right outside Adoration Chapel.
That was your first kiss. Was a cigarette.
First kiss was Gertrude before she went to Adoration. Yeah, you know, you just have fun, man. We would get out on the bikes is what we would do. And we would just go explore. Things we'd go into the sewers, you would find. Now you want to be careful. You don't want to do this around the time it's raining because that's how you can get swept up in the sewers. But we would go explore the sewers.
What'd you find?
Just a lot of water and some ladders. You know, the occasional like thing that got swept down the deal. You know, we would go out and look at, try and find deer and pretend to hunt them with a stick. We would go to the river and we would, try and catch whatever we could. There wasn't much fish there, but we had our nets and we also weren't supposed to go down by the river after rain. And one time we did go down by the river after a big rain and, we got caught. On account of the mud on the boots and my cousin, Tom and Jerry, they had to have their birthday parties canceled. And I remember
you guys got in trouble.
Yep. We got in trouble. They caught us down there. We got yelled at. This was the year Randy Moss got drafted from Marshall to the Minnesota Vikings. So that'll date me a bit right there. But
the way you're talking alone is going to date you. But
why?
So then we went down to the river.
Well, yeah, now I feel like you're making fun, Kelly. Now my feelings are getting hurt.
I'm sorry.
Oh, they weren't actually getting hurt.
Yeah, I know. I'm not actually sorry.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Yep. Yeah, so I forgot the question, but that's your answer. What else?
What were we talking about?
I don't remember.
Okay. Yeah. I think it was a tangent.
Oh, was I funny as a kid?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I was too busy living. It's too busy living to try and be funny.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just asking in general about tour dates. Do you want to just kind of talk about like this next year, what you're going to be doing?
Yeah. Wow. Thanks, people. I'm not sure if that was a plant question or not.
No, Kelly, like tons of people were asking, when are you coming to California? When are you coming out west? When are you coming to Arizona? So it's just like kind of in general.
So thank you guys for asking. And I've been to a lot of those places, California, Arizona, over the past year. And And so where we are, this is the good old fashioned tour. I'm coming up to the end of it. So we're playing a lot of places. We've got basically Elkhart, Indiana, Grand Rapids, and I'm looking at tour dates now. This is in early December. And then I take a little bit of a break where I'm going to go find myself a deer up at the cabin, you know.
See? When does deer season end?
Well, bow season extends, I think, at least through I got to look on that date. But bow season, gun season is kind of in the middle of bow season. You can bow hunt throughout. And I haven't gotten a deer yet. And I still got to do that. Anyways, Cincinnati in early.
Top of the new year.
Top of the new year. Then Michigan, Royal Oak, Albany, New York, or Albany, however you want to say that. Red Bank, New Jersey, Lexington, Kentucky, Indianapolis, Indiana, Springfield. And then I do a bunch of Chicago dates. Oh my gosh, I got a lot of tour dates. Yeah, here. Shooting my special in Appleton on 2/21/2022 February. And then, so just so you guys know, so basically, you spend a year or so with new material and really working it into hopefully a really good special. And I'm really excited about this special. I've been working on it a while. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be good. We're shooting it in Appleton because that's where I did my first stand up show ever. Like first headlining show ever was in Appleton at Skyline Comedy Club. And so that's why I wanted to shoot this special in Appleton. And then once we shoot the special, then we start working new material and really finding the next tour. And so I'm going to be doing that kind of a mix of old material and new material. And by old material, I mean, still none of these cities have seen this material. So it's still new to them, but then I'll start working out the new tour. That's Seattle, Portland, Eugene, Oregon, St. Louis, Cedar Rapids, Omaha, Charlotte, Tysons, Virginia, Knoxville, Tennessee, Jacksonville, Florida. All those dates, those are in the spring. That's when I'll start doing kind of half new material, half older material. And then I'm going to start up the new tour come next fall, where I'll do a bunch of, I'll kind of start all over again, start with a bunch of Wisconsin places, start testing the new material, and really, you know, develop a new deal.
Yeah. So,
and that's the exhausting process of
stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to see Charlie come out to where you are, send us an email at crabscast@gmail.com and just be like, hey, you got fans here. And yeah,
I like that.
Yep.
I like that.
A lot of people also asked,
yeah,
are you single?
Am I single? Wow. Am I single? No, I'm not single.
Dang.
I got a girlfriend.
Breaking hearts left and right in the Midwest.
Yeah.
All right. Dante's Not Impressed asks, why is Dante the handsomest tour manager you've ever seen? And why is he the coolest tour manager you've ever had?
Wait, what did Dante want to know? Why is he the handsomest tour manager I've ever seen?
Yeah, and the coolest. And then he also said, are you sick of him yet? You'll probably have to fire him before he stops submitting questions. Oh, that last one wasn't a question.
I'm glad Dante's working real hard downstairs. Dante's great. Hey, you just came on the road with us,
yeah,
through the Texas run. What'd you think? Did you have fun?
I had a lot of fun. I've never been to Texas. Bucky's was crazy. Yeah, I had a really good time. We actually have a Patreon coming up.
I did not like Bucky's. I'm going to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I could tell you were overstimulated. Your ADHD brain.
First of all, Bucky's, you're this massive freaking deal. And all they have is this styrofoam stuff, you know, that pissed me off. It's like, why do you insist on doing that?
What would you have preferred?
Pay like a paper cup. Like for the coffee, like why do you have to do this styrofoam? What's the benefit?
There
is no benefit.
Actual.
Well, that's annoying. But it's like, it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. It's just being a prick at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm going to get off my soapbox.
Yeah. We have a vlog coming out of our Texas run. That'll probably be out this week on Patreon. We shot a lot of stuff. We had a lot of footage and probably 3 minutes of us. Like, I have a reaction thing of you and Adam just like being overstimulated there. And we were talking about how going to Bucky's after being like a quick trip, like devout, is like a Catholic going to a non-denominational church for the first time.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, I mean, you guys can do this if you cheat, you know. like what, you want to bring rock and roll into a place of worship?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but no, I like Texas a lot. It was really nice weather-wise, and then I go back to Minnesota. It was freezing, so
yeah,
that was cool. I enjoyed doing that. I don't know how you do it all the time.
Go on the road?
Yeah, it makes me appreciate what you have to do.
No, I'm good. Money well spent.
yeah, it was cool. I had a really good time though.
Yeah, it was fun. It was great having you. And you know, any time if you want to come along to Tyson's, Virginia,
I'll go to Eugene, Oregon. I have friends there.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
Wait, how did you know I wanted to go to Tyson's so bad?
Yeah, I had a feeling.
Yeah,
that's where the chicken comes from.
Is it really?
I don't know.
Maybe. I would go. I would go for that alone. I wished you. I wished YOU. Do you mind when fans approach you? I saw you at a Packers game, but didn't want to bug you.
No, I don't mind at all. Actually, there was somebody, Rafi was telling me that there was somebody in our video, in the comments on our Packers Bears video that said, like, I big time them at a Packers game, which if that's you, I'm so sorry that happened. Because I really try to. Anybody who wants a picture, anybody who wants to say hi, especially at a Packers game, I go there knowing that, like, there's a lot of crossover and, like, people who like my stuff and people who like Packers stuff. So if I go there, I know that that's, like, that's a possibility of that happening. And I also I really enjoy talking to people and all of that. I will say, you know, as a warning, there are some people that look like me that are not me. So if you say, hey, Charlie, can I get a picture? And they get, because I've gotten messages from a few people that look like me that say, bro, you've ruined my life. I'm so sick of people asking if they're me or asking if I'm you or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'll get a haircut.
That's why you got a haircut.
But so it just make sure you're asking the right guy or whatever. But no, I mean, I definitely will. Short of, like, if I have to be getting somewhere and I have to leave for purposes of I'm late getting, like, that's why I'm late a lot of times. But I'll definitely take a picture. I love saying hi to people. And I, you know, I love you guys. You gave me quite a bit. So if a picture or whatever, you want to say hi or you want me to sign sometime, I'm always happy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. To the guy that I apparently big timed, I am sorry. I didn't mean to do that. And also, I've only been to one game this year, so which is crazy, that part being on the road. So it's possible also that it wasn't me, but if it was me, I'm very sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I probably didn't hear you. That's the other thing. Sometimes I can't hear you, or if I'm talking to somebody else or I'm in the middle of a conversation, somebody comes up, I don't want to be rude to the person I'm talking to who also may be, like, a fan. So I do my best, but I understand that sometimes it's not, you know, it doesn't always come across that way. So sorry for the times done.
Yeah, it's really weird. Sometimes you, like, never hear me. I'm just kidding. I was gonna
What'd
say
you that. Say? jokes.
Okay, someone asked, Kira Benton asked, Charlie, given your passion for protecting the environment, have you tried or thought about trying a vegetarian diet?
Vegetarian, yes. So I actually, vegetarian is an interesting one because if you're in Wisconsin, it just depends where you live in the country, if that's actually the best for the environment. Like, what honestly is, now I understand some people have a moral thing against killing animals, and I understand that. But if you don't, if you're eating other animals, or you don't have a moral thing against it, I think fish and like deer and wild game is one of the most eco-friendly things you can eat because the populations are strong and it's right there. And if you get one deer, you can fill your freezer for a while. And it's, like, local, You know what I mean? It's because the problem with some vegetarian stuff is if you're shipping it all the way from places that grow vegetables, it's not necessarily better for the environment. What is, though, is if you have a garden and you grow it and then you can it or freeze it or whatever, and then you do it in smoothies or whatever. So anyways, I try to eat like a lot of that stuff just because it's healthier and everything. And obviously it's tough, though, because, you know, I live in Wisconsin. It's America's dairy land. And boy, do I love my cheese, I tell you. So it's all a trade off. And you find various ways of trying to offset the things you do like. And that's why we got the old solar panels up there. Take care of some of the other sins, but we are all just trying to do our best. So, but largely, yeah, I try to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables and get nutrition that way. You know, it's tough. I think there should be an app that says like, hey, like fill in the Venn diagram. What's the cheapest, best for the environment, healthiest food I can eat right now? You know, That's something that if AI is going to do something productive, that would be good. Someone should develop that app. AI should do that, you know, because I think that would be great. Because a lot of times when you're trying to figure out something to eat, you're like, damn, I just need like fuel, but I don't want to think about like all those things. So just what do I got? You know, That would be great. And then you can just go
there. So AI think for you. You want AI to think and do the mental work so that you can just be there and eat whatever they tell you to eat.
I mean, when you say it like that, I sound like a real prick.
No, you don't sound like a prick. You sound like Wally. That's what I'm...
No, well, I mean, if what they're telling me is best for the environment and best for my health, okay.
Would you believe it?
Would I believe it? I would... look at what they were suggesting, look at why they were suggesting it. And if it made sense, yeah, I would believe it.
Charlie is an AI enthusiast.
Look at you. I think AI is there, and I think AI can do a lot of good stuff and is doing a lot of good stuff. It is. It is also doing some damaging things.
Yeah.
And I think it's just it's like anything else. We need to balance it and understand it and not just we need to work with it and work with it first and foremost to help the environment and to help our health.
Yeah.
Instead of having it help us develop militaries that will kill each other quicker.
On that note, Red Carpet Salon Wisconsin asks, if you could see any music artist dead or alive, who would it be?
Jimi Hendrix.
That was quick. Yeah. Not Everclear?
I saw Everclear. Just saw Everclear, baby.
That was like the best part of the trip for me.
That was the best part of the trip for me. Everclear was like one of my first favorite bands. If you don't know Everclear, it's real 90s. Real 90s.
I showed my mom them, and she was like, oh my God, their song is on my workout playlist. So she knows who they are.
Oh yeah. That's what's up.
Santa Monica, whatever that is.
I will buy you a new house. Anyways.
Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't Santa Monica.
You were, oh gosh. We'll have to throw in the video of you dancing like a literal nerd.
Oh, such a freaking dork. I didn't care. Did not care.
It was so great. Josie Wild asks, how can I explain the love languages to my Midwest parents?
Oh, like, aren't there like a few different love languages or something? Like, yeah. Money is my love language.
No. So it's acts of service, physical touch, words of affirmation, quality time, and giving and receiving gifts.
Okay. So she wants to know how to explain those to her parents.
Yeah. How we Midwestify them.
Okay. Yeah. Give me a love language and I'll tell you how to Midwestify it.
Acts of service.
Yeah. So I show you I love you when I put up your windshield wipers. You know?
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Physical touch.
You know, so you and mom, right? When you made me, you know, sheboinkin. When a deer loves, well, they don't really love, they're polyamorous. You know, when one deer mounts another deer, and they make a new deal, that would be, or sometimes they just like snuggling. That, or you got a ratchet strap and you, and then when you, and say, that's not going anywhere. Although that sounds like an abusive relationship. So scratch that. What's the next one?
Maybe when you slap someone on the back and said, it's good to see you. Maybe that's how it's physical touch in the Midwest, instead of it being necessarily like the most intimate. Next one is words of affirmation. How is words of affirmation in the Midwest?
Yeah, good job. Hey, watch for deer. Did you get your oil changed? Did you check the pressure in your tires? You know, it's cold out there, and if you see a black patch, that could be black ice. All right, so do not accelerate too quickly on the ice. You could lose control. If you start spinning out, turn into the spin, all right? And breathe. If you drive your car out on the ice, unbuckle. On the road, it's click it or ticket. On the ice, it's click it and casket.
Yeah. Nice. Quality time.
Yeah. So, you know, when we go fishing and you're sitting in the boat and I'm sitting in the boat and I say, don't talk to me. Quality time. You know, when I'm fixing something, I say, hold the flashlight straight or I'll kick your ass. Quality time. That's about it.
Your dad character is really getting good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last one is
thank you.
Gifts.
I must have a child somewhere.
Someone asked if you want to have kids someday.
Yeah, kids would be great.
Okay, cool. So last one is gifts.
Gifts. Let's see here. Yeah, I brought you into this world and I can take you out of it. Or you want leftovers? Here, before you go, take the leftovers. No, take them. They're not going to fit in the fridge. Take them. Want a gift? Yeah, I'll give you a gift. Here. Here's a gift card. I don't know how much is on it. It was given to me. I wish you the best. I used it once, so if the number's not even, that's why. And that is how you explain love languages to your Midwest family. You're welcome.
Colleen Maraca asks, what is your biggest fear and why is it AI?
Biggest fear. Well, I think we should all have some fear about artificial intelligence, but I don't think it needs to be a debilitating fear. I think it just needs, we need to pay attention. Mm. We need to not just get super distracted by our phones in our lives, that we just let the government make decisions about this and not have any input, you know, which I think is kind of happening. But, and I think we need to, I mean, AI is a powerful tool, and I think people should, if you're going to use it, I think use it to try and solve a problem, you know? Mm. Like I was trying to, there's all this, the plastic floating on the top of the river. If you walk the Milwaukee River, all you see is freaking plastic, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was trying to use AI to figure out like, how do you do it? Apparently they got these river skimmers already. Someone already invented it.
Great.
But they do it on these big rivers. But how do you do it on like a smaller river? Like, and why doesn't Milwaukee have that yet? You know, because yeah. The thing with the plastics is if they're floating on top of the river, they photodegrade, which means the sun breaks down the plastic. All right. Mm. And once that happens, you get these nanoplastic particles, which is why we're all walking around. You have plastic in your brain. I have plastic in my brain. I got plastic in my blood. You got plastic in your organs. You do. Look it up. Everybody. And that's not fair to us, you know, but so there's two elements to that problem. One is that you've got the oil lobby, the oil companies make all these plastics, you know, So you've got them on the input side and then on the, so it's two problems. It's how do you get them to stop making plastic? Well, that's all the time we have for now, folks. But if you want to listen to my full Cripescast, check out the Cripescast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down. Just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin. The Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No. Gotta keep her moving.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday morning, we're in Washington, D.C. to talk about the Trump transition and how progressives need to reform their year-round campaign tactics.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Ho ho, the holidays are here, and it's time to pick a present from the grown-up gift list with Civic Media's statewide text-to-win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of the grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on the grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win starting Monday morning. Ho ho ho!
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.